All right. All good. All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Colquhoun meeting the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It is Monday, December 30th, approximately 10 a.m. We're meeting for a special meeting today, which started out as one agenda item, and now we're up to several agenda items. But I think that's great. Quite honestly, the commission had a very busy late November and December with hearings and a lot of things, and so I think it's great to have this special meeting today to really close out some. There's a lot of meat on the bones for today's meeting, and just want to thank staff who did an extraordinary job getting all these things put together for our special meeting. And just I don't have any other opening comments than that. I maybe have some at the end, but I see if Commissioner Christman or Fedorchuk has any.
I will have some closing comments, but nothing opening.
Right, thank you.
Well, I should have opening comments so that we're not all commenting at the end and dragging the meeting out, but I will just move right into the meeting agenda.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Okay, we do not have any consent items since everything today is special meeting agenda, so let's get rolling. Item BK1. I move the commission issue an application fee refund to Montana Dakota Utility Company, a division of MDU Resource Group, Inc., in the amount of $9,728.13, case number PU13-272.
Second.
Both this motion and the next motion deal with refunds of the remaining balance that the company has filed for the application fee dealing with the public convenience necessity of the 345 KV line, which will go from Ellendale to the South Dakota border, and then it will transition through South Dakota as part of the CapEx project. So all this motion does is refund the remaining balance. This normally would be a consent item. We do have, I should point out, the actual siting hearing has been scheduled for April 1st on this case, so that's a separate agenda item. But in this case, everything's in order.
We have a motion, a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the commission issue an application fee refund to Otter Tail Power Company in the amount of $9,728.14, case number PU13-273.
Second.
The parallel case with the previous motion, 345 KV line, Ellendale to South Dakota border. This was the PCNN refund.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK3. I move the commission adopt the order in case number PU13-789, Quest Corporation's Performance Indicator Definitions and Performance Assurance Plan Revisions.
Second.
Under the Federal Telecom Act of 1996, Quest Corporation, doing business as CenturyLink, is required to provide open access to its networks and facilities and to other providers of telecommunication services, such as competitive local exchange carriers, known as CLECs. Measures known as Performance Indicator Definitions, or PIDs, provide specific data about the quality of the open access provided by CenturyLink to other carriers. And Performance Assurance Plan, or PAP, apply specific standards or goals that the performance measures must accomplish. In September of this year, I guess it's still 2013, CenturyLink filed an application with the commission for approval of their redesigned PIDs and redesigned PAP. These changes reflect changes they've made in other jurisdictions. CenturyLink proposes that this goes into effect on January 1st. On November 22nd of this year, the commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing and provided until December 24th for comments and requests for hearing. No comments or requests for hearing were received. The commission had an informal discussion on this matter on December 18th. Yeah, where we had a variety of questions for the company. And basically what they're doing is they've just continued to refine some of the performance indicators, refine some of the measures. And what this really does is it's a plan to guarantee that the service that Quest provides to other companies is the same as the service that they provide to themselves through exchange services. So it really, it's a way of a protection, if you will, put in place by the FCC that guarantees that Quest and doing business at CenturyLink is providing the same type of service to all those that get service from them. So everything appears to be in order, and I look forward to the motion, to the vote.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK4. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for comment in the application for approval of an interconnection agreement amendment negotiated between Mid-Continent Communication and Consolidated Communications Network, Inc., case number PU-13-909.
Second.
In December of this year, Mid-Continent entered into an interconnection agreement amendment with Consolidated Communication Network, Inc., pursuant to Section 251 of the Telecom Act of 1996. The agreement sets forth terms and conditions under which they'll provide interconnection service for transport and termination of local services. Normally, these type of agreements, when they're filed with the Commission, go into effect 90 days unless someone requests a hearing. In this case, both companies have requested that, if possible, they're able to take the provisions of this agreement into effect before 90 days. So, therefore, we're issuing this order. And if the Commission will entertain comments until February 14th, at that time a motion would be in order if we decide to for our next meeting. So what this really does is that it provides a date that anyone interesting to comment on this has until February 14th. If there are none and the Commission deems forward, we could actually have a vote on this prior to the 90 days, which normally this goes into effect. The one thing I would note about this is it's very interesting that Mid-Continent has really become a major player in North Dakota telecommunications. The Commission was heavily involved over the last couple of years dealing with Mid-Continent and some of their access up in the northwestern part of the state. Here, Mid-Continent is continuing to have a relationship with Consolidated Communication in the southwest. And we've seen in reporting out of the Fargo area that Mid-Continent is proposing quite a build-out in that region of the state. So it's very interesting that the more communication companies are getting involved in North Dakota. I think it's going to be better for the customers long-term. But it really puts the highlight on making sure that all the rules set forth in the FCC Act of 96 are followed and how it might all play out in different venues in North Dakota. So I look forward to supporting this motion.
We have a motion, a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. All right, that concludes the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Chrisman.
Well, before I make the first motion, Mr. Chairman, I just will say legally, this is one of the most kind of confusing motions that I've probably ever made, but I don't know how to break it down. There's a lot of moving parts here, so the explanation will tell a lot more, but just that warning ahead of time.
Include all your time in the state Senate?
Including all the time in the state Senate. Fair enough. I move the Commission file the first report and recommendation of trustee with district court, together with the corresponding motion to bifurcate proceeding and approve first report and recommendation of trustee and approve credit sale contract indemnity fund payments and related documents. I further move that once the first report and recommendation is approved by the district court, the licensing director be authorized to pay valid credit sale contract indemnity claims as soon as possible in the Falkirk Farmers Elevator Company Grain Warehouse Insolvency Case Number GE-12-769.
Second.
Okay, Falkirk Farmers Elevator Company operated grain warehouses at Falkirk, North Dakota, and at Hazen, North Dakota. They filed a bond with the Commission in the amount of $380,000. And on October 10th of 2012, just less than 15 months ago, one of their patrons filed a letter for collection and outstanding funds. 5 days later, on October 15th of 2012, Timothy Erdman, one of our inspectors, visited the Falkirk facility and confirmed there were approximately 8,000 gross hundredweight of pinto beans in the facility. 3 days later, on October 18th, Michael McNamee, another inspector, confirmed there were approximately 1,700 gross hundredweight of sample-grade pinto beans stored in an unlicensed facility at Cummings on behalf of Falkirk Farmers Elevator Company. On November 9th of last year, the Commission received an electronic copy of a letter from the president of Falkirk Farmers Elevator Company advising that they were unable to fully pay for grain delivered. On November 30th of last year, the Commission filed an application for appointment as trustee. And on December 31st of last year, so just 1 day short of a year ago, the district court issued an order appointing this commission as the trustee. There were 9 claims filed, totaling $1,991,000 with the commission. It's important to point out, of those nine claims for just under $2 million, one of them is $1.7 million. The others are less than $300,000 combined. The commission liquidated all the grain assets stored at Falkirk stored on behalf of Falkirk at the unlicensed facility in Cummings, and there was a value of $7,000 there, and also the assets at the Falkirk facility itself, which was a little over $71,000, and also collected $2,000 that was an outstanding account receivable from a grain sale. So the total money we were able to deposit in the trust fund was $80,507. The insolvency proceeding involved claims payable if valid from the trust fund and also from the credit sale contract indemnity fund. Only one party has filed a claim with the commission involving the trust assets. That is that large $1.7 million one. There exists pending federal litigation between the insolvent warehouse and the claimant asserting a claim to the trust assets. The federal litigation is in its early stages. It involves substantial factual and legal issues that must be resolved before we can make a recommendation on the claim or the need for bond proceeds and any resulting distribution of the trust assets. The pending federal litigation does not affect the claims against the credit sale contract indemnity fund. The commission is not including any recommendation in this first report and recommendation regarding that one claim against the trust assets. Since the pending federal litigation will affect this claim, the commission is requesting that the court bifurcate the proceeding to allow final disposition of the portion of the proceeding involving the claims against the indemnity fund and payments to affected claimants while the claim against the trust fund remains pending. The commission recommends that each credit sale contract claimant be paid 80% of their valid claim as provided under North Dakota Century Code. The commission recommends that payment for each credit sale claim be made jointly payable to the claimant and any relevant lien holders. The valid credit sale claim amounts recommended for payment total just under $279,000. By law, each claimant is entitled to 80% of their respective valid claim. The commission is recommending that one credit sale claim in the amount of $6,452 be denied because of an offset of an account payable. The Century Code provides that expenses incurred in administering the credit sale contract indemnity fund are reimbursable from the fund. In this first report and recommendation, we recommend that reimbursement for half of the expenses come from the indemnity fund. That's expenses incurred for postage, publication, legal, and miscellaneous. The remaining half of the expenses will be addressed when the second report and recommendation is filed on the trust fund case. The total amount incurred to date is $414, and half of that is $207. The final amount to be paid will be determined once court approval is received. So to kind of summarize, we'd be asking the court to bifurcate the proceedings to allow final adjudication of the credit sale portion of the insolvency and consequent payment of credit sale claimants, approve the first report and recommendation, and authorize the commission to make payments from the credit sale contract indemnity fund, and authorize reimbursement to the commission as trustee from the indemnity fund of half of our expenses incurred. This would be filed with North Dakota District Court located in McLean County to be heard March 13th of 2014 at 9:30 a.m. in the Burley County District Court.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Joe.
That concludes my portfolio.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. Now we have Commissioner Fort Dorchick has 37 different motions. I think Randy still has the record, though, for the most in 2013.
Does he really?
Close.
All right.
Only because he put all those grain license warehouses that one agenda.
Well, I don't want any members of the media to read into the agenda today any more than they might be already by noticing that I have 2.5 times more items than you and 10 times more items than Randy. So nobody should – that should not be an indication of how hard each of us work.
Or how much we procrastinate, one of the two.
This is just straight-up gender discrimination.
Moving right along.
With that, we'll move into my items. I move the commission approve Montana Dakota Utility Company's environmental cost recovery rider rate schedule and implementation date case numbers PU 13-83 and PU 13-85.
Second.
Last meeting, we approved an order allowing the company to recover costs of this air quality control system on the Big Stone coal-fired power plant in South Dakota. This upgrade will eliminate 80% of the SOx emissions from that plant, make it environmentally compliant for many years into the future, barring any additional carbon regulations that may be forthcoming. So today's motion basically approves a rate schedule and an implementation date for customers on the motion we passed at our last meeting.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there further discussion? Since you're not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission approve Otter Tail Power Company's 2014 transmission facility cost recovery rates, case number PU-13-755.
Second.
This motion basically approves a transmission facility cost recovery rider for Otter Tail Power Company. The projected increase for customers will be 72 cents per month, and this covers a wide variety of transmission-related improvements that Otter Tail has made as a member of MISO and in their own territory, including three CapEx projects, the Fargo Line, the Bemidji Line, the Brookings Line, various other improvements throughout North Dakota, and some additional MISO charges for compliance upgrades to improve reliability and some new some cost sharing for projects that MISO has throughout the region. So that basically summarizes what this rider will be. And again, it will amount to about 72 cents per month for the average customer.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there further discussion?
Daryl, I would just add just a comment. Not so much on this motion, but my prediction for 2014 that transmission planning and cost allocation becomes a more complex issue in North Dakota. We've heard recently from Basin Electric that they're proposing to join Southwest Power Pool, and so that's another regional transmission organization. So you potentially will have MISO operating in North Dakota, Southwest Power Pool operating in North Dakota, and the impacts that might have to MDU and to Otter Tail could be significant, dealing with cost allocation. And there's so much shared transmission in the state dealing from historical agreements. It'll be interesting how some of that plays out as Southwest Power Pool comes in. But for MDU specifically, they're going to have more touch points with potentially Southwest Power Pool than anybody else in the state. So we'll just have to watch how that all plays out. But I predict for next year, it's going to be a lot more discussion about transmission planning and cost allocation in North Dakota. And it'll keep Jerry Lehan very busy, won't it, Jerry?
So. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order issuing certificate of corridor compatibility number 151, route permit number 162, and route permit number 163 to Dakota Prairie Refining LLC and Lario Shipping LLC for the construction of a 6-inch and 8-inch refined petroleum products pipeline and associated facilities located in Stark County, North Dakota, case number PU-13-799.
Second.
This project is a piece of the Dakota Prairie refining project out in outside of Dickinson. Very exciting project. First greenfield refinery in the country in, I think, 20 or 30 years. These are two pipelines that will be used to ship some of the byproducts of that process, or transfer some of the byproducts of that process. Dakota Prairie will process 20,000 barrels of Bakken crude per day and produce about 7,000 to 10,000 barrels of diesel fuel per day. And that product will be transported by tankers to end-use locations within about 50 miles of the refinery. So all that product will be used really close to where it's produced. The refinery will also produce about 6,500 barrels per day of naphtha and 6,000 barrels per day of ATB, atmospheric tower bottoms. The purpose of this project is to provide for the transmission of the naphtha and the atmospheric tower bottoms byproducts from the refinery to the Lario rail hub, where these petroleum products will be loaded into rail tankers for transportation to other destinations. The project is pretty straightforward. It consists of storage tanks at the refinery and a pipeline that runs about 5,900 feet. One pipeline is 6 inches in diameter. The other is 8 inches in diameter. They will run across the top of the ground, and the project is estimated to cost about $5 million. They looked at a number of different options for servicing these byproducts, including moving the rail facility closer to the actual production facility, but this ended up being the least cost alternative. This area is highly industrialized and disturbed already, so it will have this will have no impact on exclusion areas or avoidance areas. All the land is owned and maintained by the companies involved. And so basically the biggest issue with this project was that it crosses the Hart River, and so that was one of the main reasons why we wanted to get out there and see how they planned on dealing with this and dealing with the river crossing. They have it engineered so that any spill that would occur crossing the bridge would be designed so that it flows into a separated pit and all approved by the federal EPA, I believe, or the Army Corps of Engineers. So it seemed very straightforward. It's a good project, and I'm comfortable with this order, and I recommend we approve it today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just, I would just add, you know, I think after hearing from people for 20 years about how badly North Dakota needs to build a refinery, now to see the private sector doing it and adjustments like this, you know, I think their original plan was to have their own little rail spur there so they could ship the naphtha and the bottoms out themselves, but with other development in the oil patch and the rail facility ending up right next door, they adjusted and found an even better way of doing it by just piping it over there and letting them load it out where they're already doing that kind of work. And it's just remarkable to see things coming together well for the development of the energy industry in the state. And of course, you can find examples where things don't go well, but here's an example of it going very well in an orderly manner where people are able to work together and actually minimize their footprint. And so I think it's a really nice project to see happen.
This, in the hearing, I found it really exciting that the project, all of the diesel produced by this refinery will be consumed within a 50-mile radius. And so there's a huge demand for this. It's sad that the project couldn't be bigger, but I think for permitting reasons, the federal government, it's almost impossible to get a refinery permitted and constructed, so they had to keep it at this size. And who knows, maybe they'll be paving the way for future additional projects like this, because the demand for diesel is expected to increase from 50,000 barrels per day to 75,000 barrels per day by 2025. And we just aren't producing that much diesel in North Dakota at this point, so we have to import a lot of it. And this kind of a project is really in demand and needed in the West.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, I didn't research it back, but I'm guessing that this is the first commission hearing that was held out in many years without indoor plumbing.
That was... It made for an interesting and relatively short hearing.
But there was access to facilities outside, just for the record. Right?
Yeah.
I would just throw my two cents on two guests now that we're talking about it. What was unique about these two pipelines, looking back, is I think this is the first time, I know since I've been here, that we've cited pipelines that aren't necessarily natural gas or crude. These are byproducts. And what was interesting during the hearing is that the company testified that the fact that they could have these two pipelines have byproducts in the refinery process and they found markets for them was why it penciled out for them so well. So that might be one of the reasons that really made this become cost-effective for them is they're able to find homes for these two pipeline products, and that really made the numbers pencil out very well for them.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, my next motion, and probably the reason why we have such a full media gallery today, is on the MDU Resource Group natural gas service rate increase application. I move the Commission adopt the order on settlement approving the October 23, 2013 settlement agreement between Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group, Inc., and Commission Advocacy Staff in Montana Dakota Utility Company's natural gas service rate increase application, case number PU-13-803.
Second.
So just to walk through the history a little bit here, on September 18th, MDU filed a $6.8 million or 6.4% increase over current rates for their gas, natural gas service. This is the first rate increase they've filed in 10 years since 2004. On October 9th, the Commission approved their request for interim rate increase based on the projected 2014 increase request, and this was for an interim rate increase of $4.5 million or 4.162% over current rates. This became effective on November 17th. We also issued a notice of filing and intervention deadline, and no petitions to intervene were received. On October 23rd, MDU and staff filed a settlement agreement to resolve the expense, revenue, and return issues in this proceeding. The settlement agreement did not address or resolve outstanding rate design issues in this proceeding. We issued a notice of public input sessions and held those in December, and we also held an informal hearing on the settlement agreement in the commission hearing room in November. To summarize what the settlement agreement is and some of the drivers for it, the settlement agreement calls for an increase of $4.2 million for the company, a 3.95% overall increase in rates. It calls for a 10% return on equity for the company that's capped in 2014, and any excess beyond that would be refunded to customers. The settlement agreement also calls for a 50-50 sharing of return excess on the following year. Anything over 10% the following year would be returned to customers on a 50-50 basis. And it also calls for a moratorium on new rate cases until 2015. The company said the drivers for this increase, and it's important for customers to realize this too, this is not driven by the price of gas. It's not related to the price of gas in the pipeline, but the cost of the distribution pipeline to get the gas to customers' houses. So since 2004, MDU has had a gross investment in North Dakota gas operations increase of $100 million, or approximately 76%. These investments include replaced or upgraded town border stations, distribution facilities for new customers, and replacement of existing distribution facilities, a landfill gas production facility, new district operation buildings, an automated meter reading system, and new customer billing systems. investment per customer has increased continually since the last general rate increase. This increase in investment has been accompanied by a growth in customers, but MDU customers continue to use less gas on a per-customer basis. They have also combined a large number of operational and maintenance expense efficiencies, and so that's why the resulting increase is lower than it could have been, perhaps, based on their investment increases. See. So, in summary, this settlement agreement calls for a $4.2 million increase in revenues for the company, a little less than a 4% increase in overall rates. It's the first increase that the commission has considered since 2004. It will help pay for the $100 million increase in investments by the company in their gas service, and it is more than $2 million less than what the company was originally seeking in their rate increase settlement. And so for that reason, I think it's a good settlement agreement. It's favorable. I think the company has showed that they are doing what they can to hold down costs and making significant investments in the distribution service to bring on customers in North Dakota. So I recommend that we approve this order today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would share Commissioner Fedorchak's thoughts. I think she laid it out very well on the background of the case. Just add in there a little bit more. The natural gas infrastructure for the state has grown. There's no question about it. I mean, MDU has been able to keep those costs down for a long period of time. They came in with what they felt they needed to run their operation. And I think after they heard some of the discussion that maybe the commission had amongst ourselves and how the XL rate case continued, they thought upon perhaps meeting with staff and coming up with what they considered a bare-bones settlement agreement, and they put it forward, and we reviewed it, and I think it looks really good. And so I look forward to supporting this motion today, and also just keep the awareness for pipeline safety, because this is part of that out there. They're going to put a lot of money in natural gas infrastructure, and some of that will help with being safer out there. And also, I would thank the company, too, and that may sound kind of interesting, but we have other rate cases in front of the commission right now with other companies, and the companies, when they define what exactly they need to run their operation, they come in and make their case to the commission, they answer our questions, it's very easy to get to a decision. When you come in as a company not quite sure what you want, and you kind of waffle back and forth, as companies are doing in the eastern part of the state right now in some of our rate cases, it's much harder for the commission to get to a decision. So I just want to thank everyone involved for this, and I look forward to the vote.
I will just add one thing. It's difficult to say what the increase per customers would be at this point because the rate design is unsettled. So this settles the revenue amount, and we will be later setting a hearing schedule for the rate design component of this rate increase request. So what the company proposed would call for a average increase per month of $2.72 per customers. But that's what they're proposing, and we have to evaluate that pretty carefully because they have some new different models for rate design that we'll be scrutinizing pretty carefully.
Well, and maybe even to add upon that during our public input sessions, we really heard nothing about the need for the overall revenue. What we heard was concern from senior citizens and families that how the rate design might affect them. And so that, I think, will perhaps become we'll hear a lot more about in the rate design case. But there was, I would say, maybe not opposition is the word, but there was significant concern about the way the current rate design is laid out. So that's why that was probably not included in the settlement agreement, because they could sense it probably wouldn't have gone anywhere.
I do want to just emphasize one more time that the rate increase is somewhat counterintuitive to the public to understand when they see the price of gas going down. And so it's important to emphasize that this rate increase is being driven by the infrastructure to receive the gas, not by the price of gas and the price of the product that the customers are using. And so it's the pipelines to get to the house, not the gas that's in the pipelines.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And the next step of this process, I move the commission issue a notice of hearing concerning rate design issues in Montana Dakota Utility Company's natural gas service rate increase application, case number PU-13-803.
Second.
So this is step two in this process. What we already discussed, the rate design issue has not been settled in this case. And so this motion basically announces that we have scheduled a public hearing for February 5th of 2014 at 8:30 a.m. in the commission hearing room of the state capitol on to address rate design issues not resolved by the October 23rd settlement agreement approved by the commission. Let me see here. Do we have some deadlines? That's it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Did you guys second it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you did. I'm sorry, Randy. I didn't hear you.
Is there any further discussion?
Nope.
Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
My sixth motion, I move the commission deem the amendment to the applications for a corridor certificate and route permit do not materially affect the applications and that a rehearing in case number PU-13-825 Bakken Oil Express LLC's proposed 38-mile, 16-inch diameter crude oil pipeline in Dunn and Stark Counties, North Dakota is not required.
Second.
Sarah, was that the latest motion for this JF6? Is there two for this?
There's two, one's for the order and one's for the amendment. So there are two motions to the office.
Okay. All right. Yep. The order is at the last amendment. Okay. All righty.
That's JF10, right? Okay.
So basically, this order moves this project along so that we can provide a full order and an approval of their siting application. A landowner involved in this project requested that the company change the route. This happened after our hearing. The entire change has been approved by the landowner, requested by the landowner, is on the landowner's land. And so this motion basically says that that change in the application does not materially affect the application as a whole, and we can proceed without rehearing.
We have not had a second on this motion.
Oh, I second it.
All right, sorry.
Good catch, Joe.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. I move the commission deem complete the applications of Enbridge Pipelines, North Dakota LLC for a corridor certificate, for a route permit, and for a waiver of procedures and time schedules contingent upon receiving from the applicant 1 week prior to the first hearing associated with this project the following: the piping plover habitat assessment report, the wetlands delineation survey report, and the grassland and native prairie habitat assessment report, and further move the commission issue a notice of filings, a notice of hearings concerning the construction of a 299-mile, 24-inch crude oil pipeline in Williams, Montreal, Ward, McHenry, Pierce, Towner, Ramsey, Nelson, and Grand Forks counties of North Dakota, case number PU-13-848.
Second.
This is a significant new pipeline project being led by Enbridge Pipelines, North Dakota, LLC. 299 miles, crosses nine counties in North Dakota. It also includes the expansion of the existing Beaver Lodge pump station in Williams County, expansion of the existing Stanley pump station in Montreal County, expansion of existing Berthel pump station in Ward County, and the construction of a new pump station. So three expansions and one new construction of pumping stations to facilitate this new pipeline. Basically, today we're just saying that the application is complete, contingent on the assessment, habitat assessments reports I mentioned, and announces a schedule for the public hearings. Those will be held February 19th at 8:30 a.m. at the Baker Room of the University of North Dakota School of Law, so in Grand Forks, February 20th in Devil's Lake, 8:30 a.m. at the Robert Fawcett Auditorium at Lake Region State College, and February 27th in Minot, 8:30 a.m. at the Minot City Council Chambers. Members of the public are invited and encouraged to participate in the public meetings to hear more about this, the company's plans, and to let us know how they feel about it if they have any concerns.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just appreciate everybody's work and getting the dates set and the location set for these hearings. I think that's the biggest thing with the three of us and everyone else. I see Wade Mann out there, our new ALJ, who's going to be – are you going to be doing this one for us, Wade, or somebody else? Pat Ward's going to be doing this one for us. It's really good to get these kind of things on the schedule early. This is going to be a significant pipeline hearing. There's no question about it, given the scope of this project, the size of the pipeline, where it's going to be transiting, basically running down the Highway 2 corridor, running through the Devil's Lake region, which is, you know, a lot of water up in that area. Given the backdrop of pipeline safety, I expect significant discussion about pipeline safety, shutoff valves, monitoring valves, response plans. The commission has cited a lot of pipelines in the last few years in the western half of the state. With the exception of the Keystone Pipeline that was cited before I got to the commission, we haven't cited anything in the eastern part of the state in many, many years. So the communities that we'll be having the hearings in Grand Forks and even Devil's Lake, they're not used to pipeline hearings. So it'll be very important that I think we make sure the public gets to these hearings, that we address all the concerns. And I would also throw out there, too, that given where this pipeline is going to end up, it'll transit through a big chunk of North Dakota, all of Minnesota, end up in Superior, Wisconsin. I know the Minnesota Commission is working on this pipeline as well, and I've already had a lot of questions about how do we work with Minnesota on this. Well, we don't. We work in the North Dakota jurisdiction. Minnesota works in their jurisdiction. Well, we hope at the end of the day that where it leaves North Dakota is where it enters Minnesota. We found that may seem kind of odd, but we found that in power line hearings that whoever gets their hearings done first kind of picks the point of where the leaving the state's going to be. So right now the company has a plan where they'd like it to exit North Dakota and enter Minnesota. But I think it's important for us to get our hearings completed and make a decision and then just watch this unfold, because I suspect there's going to be a lot of interest in this pipeline in North Dakota and perhaps even more as it transits through Minnesota.
You know, you mentioned the Devil's Lake body of water. Then there's also the river at Minot, the Souris, and eventually the Red River. So there's several important water bodies to move through. And I thought the number was in here, and it's been a while since I looked at the application. As I recall, this is 200 and some thousand barrels capacity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just for perspective, if that were in existence right now at our current production, but a quarter of all of our oil could go out in just this one pipeline, you know, going to be a substantial reduction in above ground movement of oil if this is approved and becomes operational.
I'm really pleased to see this project. I think it's a great addition to our infrastructure in the state to service all the oil production out west. And with, you know, growing use of rail, which has proved very valuable and efficient and has been a real blessing, quite honestly, to have the rail service available to get the oil out of the state. I'm glad to see pipeline investments like this still occurring. There's some real benefits to transmitting the oil by pipeline versus above ground, and I'm really pleased to see this and think it's going to be, once it's done and done well, a good addition to our infrastructure and maintaining the quality of life that we have in our that we have and enjoy in our state.
Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
So, Jerry, you're going to find us rides to all these places, too?
We will do that.
Right.
We have a couple of donkeys sitting out in the back right now. So we
can. Who's our lead attorney on that one? She just left. Ryan, do you know? Is that Mitch and Brian from? Okay. Thank you.
The next motion is something that we would typically handle on consent, but since this is a special meeting, we'll just work through it on our regular agenda. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in the application of Montana Dakota Utility Companies, a division of MDU Resource Group, Inc., to extend electric service to Ryan Offerth at a location in Burke County, North Dakota, case number PU-13-874.
Second.
Ryan submitted this application to receive electric service provided by MDU. Any interested party has the right to file written objection based on the issues of public convenience and necessity with the commission by January 29th of 2014. If no objections are received, the application may be granted as requested.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, just two more left. I move the commission approve Otter Tail Power Company's environmental cost recovery rider, rate schedule, and implementation date, case numbers PU-13-79 and PU-13-84.
Second.
This is similar to the motion we did earlier for MDU. Basically sets out a rate schedule and implementation date for the order we approved at our last meeting, allowing the Otter Tail Power to recover their investments in the air quality control standard at the Big Stone coal-fired power facility.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And my last motion is to move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order, and issue certificate of corridor compatibility number 150 and route permit number 161 in Bakken Oil Express LLC's combined application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and energy transmission facility route permit to authorize construction for a 38-mile, 16-inch diameter crude oil pipeline in Dunn and Stark Counties, North Dakota, originating at a tanker truck uploading and pumping facility currently being constructed near Kildare and terminating at an existing rail hub facility owned and operated by Bakken Oil Express located in the south to the southwest of Dickinson, North Dakota, case number PU-13-825.
Second.
The company applied on October 4th for a corridor certificate and route permit. We deemed the application was complete October 23rd and announced a hearing. We held the hearing December 9th out in Kildare. There was no members of the public that attended and offered any complaints or problems with this project at the hearing. And barring the last change that we just made, there was really very straightforward application. The company had received all of its easements in advance of the hearing and was really seemed ready to go. Bakken Oil Express has been authorized to do business in the state of North Dakota since 2009. This project consists of 38 miles of a crude oil pipeline that will originate at the tanker truck loading facility constructed near Kildare and terminate at the rail hub facility southwest of Dickinson. Coincidentally, the same rail hub facility that will be servicing the byproducts from the Dakota Prairie Refinery. The project will use 16-inch diameter steel pipe, and it will have the maximum daily output of 165,000 barrels per day. It will take about 12 to 14 weeks to construct. They plan on constructing throughout the winter, and is estimated to cost $14 million. The construction project will provide a reliable transportation method for up to 165,000 barrels per day of oil. This is equivalent to reducing the traffic activity from Kildare to Dickinson, a highly traveled, very busy route already. Highway 22 will remove up to 825 tanker trucks per day. The company sent a solicitation to all the agency as required by North Dakota law. They conducted a Class 1 literature search on this study area and a Class 3 cultural resource inventory, And in November 6th, the State Historical Preservation Officer concurred with the determination that no historic properties or significant sites will be affected by the project. No exclusion areas will be impacted by the project. There were three rural residents that are considered avoidance areas within 500 feet of the project corridor, and the company received waivers from all of these residences. Wetlands will be avoided to the extent possible and crossed by boring when necessary. No permanent impacts to wetlands and water bodies are anticipated by this project. The design, construction, and operation of this facility will be in accordance with the U.S. Department of Transportation regulations governing the transportation of natural gas. Bakken Oil Express will participate in North Dakota One Call excavation notice system. They will work with the emergency response plan, will be incorporated into their project, and they also agreed to inform the Public Service Commission directly of any spills consistent with its requirement to inform state and federal agencies. So with that, that kind of summarizes this project. It's going to provide another underground outlet for oil in an area that has a lot of traffic. I think it'll be a positive improvement, again, in the infrastructure for this part of the state. And I recommend we approve this order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just to highlight two things, the one being that their emergency response plan, as you could imagine, have a lot of questions about that. They're going to have their operations center right in Kildare. They walked us through their response plan and where their shutoff valves are going to be, and it looked to be very good. So what we're really seeing, I think, is the companies that are going forward, they're not worried about spending the extra dollar to make sure all the response mechanisms are in place, so that's very good to see. And the note where Bakken Oil is committed to informing the commission of any spills consistent with its requirement to inform other state and federal agencies, I would say that's a little bit of a change. We've never put that in our orders before. But this is all outside, the whole discussion about the commission cites a crude oil pipeline. Once the crude starts flowing, it becomes PHMSA jurisdictional. But by putting this in there, this will now put us on the notification list of when they have to notify PHMSA of a spill or the health department, and they'll notify the Public Service Commission. Now, we still have to hammer out exactly what the size of that might be because it says consistent with other requirements, so we're going to sort through that a little bit as this all unfolds, but it's definitely a sea change that I think is happening in our orders, consistent to when we started putting that they'll participate in one call evacuation notice system. That was one of the things we started putting in our orders about 4 years ago, Pat, give or take. It was the beginning of our really starting to enforce one call, and we led to people getting fined for one call violations for the first time. So I think this is a very noteworthy step, and I think it's very appropriate.
I would just add, you mentioned in your comments about the reducing truck traffic. I have some very good friends south of Manning who have wintered cattle for me for years, and I recall that highway when it was a peaceful stretch of road, and it's kind of cute, the courthouse nestled down along the river in an otherwise tiny town there at Manning, and you sort of catch the edge of those clay buttes coming, kind of off the edge of the Badlands a little bit, and now it is hectic, to say the least, to drive that stretch of road. And when you mentioned I believe it was three residences that are within 500 feet and that they had all signed off on it, I am not at all surprised that they were willing to have the pipeline come within 500 feet of their house if it will reduce some of the traffic or eliminate the need to increase the traffic. So I just wanted to point that out.
Is there any further discussion? Since you're not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That, Mr. Chairman, completes my portfolio today. It kind of is a good snapshot of the work that's going on at the commission, both to deal with the sweeping changes affecting the electric industry and to support the significant growth in our state and in our state's energy industry.
Absolutely. Okay, I guess the only thing I would have before we open up for questions, and we'll see if my colleagues, is just
You know, it's the end of the year, and I just want to publicly thank the staff who's really, I think, really stepped up to the plate this last year. I think it was, my busiest year in the commission by far was this last year. And I want to publicly thank Commissioner Crispin and Commissioner Fedorchak, because it was only a year ago when the whole brand-new commission really steps in place, where I've been here for a while, but quite honestly, 4 years is not an eternity. And Randy coming off an election cycle, Julie just stepping into the job. You know, we had a lot of challenges facing us. And looking back, I just want to thank you both, because I thought it was a pretty darn good year. We went through a very challenging legislative session. It was only my third session, but it was by far the most challenging when it looked at taking away certain positions, how we had to fight for our natural gas position, which in hindsight, we surely had the right idea back then of going out and getting the extra pipeline safety position. You know, the amount of hearings that we had this year. In my previous years, we had 1 year that we had a lot of more wind farms, and next year we had a lot more pipelines, and next year we had a lot more rate cases. But this year we had everything from, the major 345 kV power lines to all the pipelines to all the different wind farms. So just thank you both for the good year, and hopefully next year at the same time we're all three sitting here too. So open it up.
Well, I just would add to that, coming in here fresh, a couple days short of a year ago, it's been very interesting for me to really get to know the staff and realize the almost family-type bonds that develop among us all here at the commission. And it's been a great working relationship. I too, have really enjoyed my fellow commissioners working with you, getting to know the job alongside with Julie and your leadership on the commission, Mr. Chairman. I've had a number of people ask me about our working relationships over the course of the past year, and I've told a lot of folks, I appreciate the quick study that Commissioner Fedorchak has been, and your leadership, and that I think it's good that we have a leader who has been here long enough to provide us good leadership, but not so long that you've forgotten how hard it is to learn a lot of this stuff, and that it's complex. And I'm proud of the work that this commission has done in the past year, and look forward to working with both of you for much more than one more year.
Well, I will echo those comments of appreciation for both of yours. Patience with me, your willingness to explain things and take extra time to deal with all my questions, your professionalism, and your thoroughness. I appreciate it. Also for the staff as well. It's a really great group of folks here. You're a real asset, not only to this agency, but to this people, this state, and the professionalism you show to each and every application, each and every matter that the commission has before it. And people don't necessarily know or appreciate how much work goes on here, and that's as it should be, but really you are a real asset to the citizens of this state, and I'm very proud of the work you're doing and being associated with it. So thank you for that. I thought today we were going to be doing some resolutions for the new year. Are we going to be doing that?
It's up to you.
All right. Well, we did promise that, and so I spent a little bit of time in the last 24 hours thinking about what I might resolve to do in the new year. And making public New Year's resolutions is always a little bit frightening. I've done this one other time, and I resolved to stop shopping. And I actually, only for essentials, and it was the longest New Year's resolution I've ever kept, and I kept it for 5 months. So, so New Year's resolutions are kind of, here today, gone tomorrow, unfortunately. But the New Year's resolutions that I will outline today, there's four of them, sort of run the gamut of personal and professional, and in keeping with the tradition that I've learned at the Public Service Commission, that everything is better when communicated in an acronym. My New Year's resolutions are in acronym form, and the first one is I'm to resolve to find ways for to stimulate PDAs. And a PDA is a public discussion and awareness program. And this is to address the all the sweeping changes that are occurring in the electric industry, as well as public discussion on all these matters that we talked about today, pipeline infrastructure, how best to maintain the quality of life in our state in the midst of all this exciting growth that we have. And I think it's a really important matter to have the public involved in our discussions. And so my first resolution is focused on that. Second resolution is just a simple health one, and it's called a WSIX. Walk the stairs one times a day. So you staff members who are walking the stairs, I expect to be invited to walk with you and to do that at least one time a day. I started the commission doing this, and it lasted for about 2 months, so I'm hoping to actually make it the full year this time. The third one is, as many of you know, I've announced my intention to run for re-election, and some of my great colleagues on the commission have warned me that they've been through several wars, and running for office is more exhausting than going to war. And so I figure I need to get my head oriented straightly. And so my third resolution is for PPP. To remain positive always throughout the campaign, to focus on find time for daily prayer, which will help me remain positive, and to always keep my perspective. And I've had the benefit of working with folks who have done that over the years. Ed Schaefer comes to mind. Dave Thompson told it to me best. The thing he appreciated most about Ed Schaefer was he never took himself too seriously. And I think that's a real an asset to people in these positions, that keep the perspective on what you're doing. And my fourth one is a simple competition with my colleagues, and that is to participate in the BBC, the biggest buck contest. And so this year I have to complete my hunter's safety so that I can actually
now we're talking.
Participate in the deer hunting conversations that occur here every November.
So you have land access too, don't you?
I do have land access. All right. That's it.
Thank you, Julie. My time in the commission here, I've always been in the majority until the New Year's resolution vote. So I will now turn over to Commissioner Chrisman.
Well, I have to say that first one kind of scared me, because when, Commissioner, when you mentioned PDAs, I was thinking of public display of affection, and those PDAs and ranchers are kind of mutually exclusive, so you kind of scared me on that one. Well, first of all, I am resolving to, within the next year, continue to work for finding ways to come up with faster resolutions to insolvent grain dealer cases. I think we've made some progress in that regard, and I am convinced that we can do even better and find ways to make these cases wrap up and reach the best possible resolutions, but in a more timely fashion. The second one you kind of partways stole, but I had such great satisfaction with winning the commission big buck contest that, you know, I'm resolving to win that again next year. And lastly, you know, a year ago I kind of made a resolution to myself, because I had heard comments from time to time of actions of previous commissioners, some that were kind of tied to the office a lot and digging in and doing paperwork, some that preferred to be out on sites and visiting and seeing things firsthand. And I wasn't sure what would be the best way of learning for myself, because we all learn differently. And I sort of resolved to try to, as much as I tend to be an outdoors person, to tie myself to what I thought was the harder method at first and spend the first year primarily in the office as much as possible, trying to learn the intricacies of this job. And I feel like I've made a lot of progress. And at this stage in my career, I think for the next year, I want to make an effort to spend more time out visiting, you know, telecommunications facilities, pipelines, power lines, scale facilities, and both our active and abandoned coal mines, and get out and do more on-site work. So that's the third of my resolutions.
All right, perfect. Well, I will offer mine up in dissent. But no, I think it's a great idea. What's so nice when Randy talked about being enough time in the commission, you kind of know what's going on, but not so been here so long, you don't remember what it was like. So that's a very true statement. So, but one of the things we talked about was resolutions way back when, and we didn't do it. But you know what? I think it's a good idea. The one I did think of when everyone was talking about is this. This last year, we've lost some really good North Dakotans. I think back to we lost Chet Wrighton this year up in Minot, you know, a pillar of Minot, bringing in Hoos Fest and all the great things up there. Guys like Ben Clayburgh passed away, spending all their time up in Grand Forks with building the UND band. And just Friday, I was at a funeral to Jerry Foss, a pillar of her community in Valley City, you know, helping Valley City stay out, doing great things. So my one New Year's resolution is very simple: to spend more time volunteering time with volunteer organizations, whether it be the Legion, the VFW, whatever it might be, because when you look back at these people, they all gave so much of their time and resources to these volunteer groups because it was the right thing to do. So that's my one resolution. I will not talk about the big buck contest. Commissioner Chrisman has an inside story there. So, okay. Anything else for the good of the team? All right. Thank you all for indulging us. We'll open it up for any questions that may arise.
The MDU rate increase, the natural gas rate increase, can you tell us, is this going to result in refunds to customers because the final rate increase as proposed is less in terms of total revenue than what MDU is already getting, if I'm reading this correctly?
I believe that the rate, the settlement agreement is virtually the same as the interim rates, so I do not anticipate that there will be refunds to customers.
And can you give us any idea of what rate structure will be used to accomplish this? I mean, how much is going to fall on the residential customers and how much on the commercial customers? Do we have any idea of that?
I would be hesitant to get into any of the rate design issues at this point, Dale, because those are all matters that are unresolved.
What about minimum charges for customers?
That's a key piece of the rate design issues that remain unresolved. They proposed some changes to minimum charges and increasing in one area and decreasing in another, and those are all issues that we haven't even heard any testimony on at all yet.
I guess what I'm getting at is, do you anticipate the new rate design being, I mean, we talked, you mentioned how the total amount isn't that different, but do you anticipate the final rate design being much different from what customers are already paying in the interim rates?
I wouldn't expect that their final bill will be significantly different than what they're paying. Where it comes from and how and what time of year the bills may change, depending on, again, how we address some of the different charges that the company is proposing to implement.
What do you consider a significant difference?
Oh, let's see here. What they've proposed would be an increase of $30 per year for the average customer. Some months they would pay less than what they're paying now, and some months they'd pay up to $8 more. So
what was the increase for the interim rates?
Let's see here.
You have a comparable figure there.
Dale, if I could throw this out while she was looking through the numbers, I think one of the things for the rate design that's going to become central to the hearing is these fixed costs. As the company's position was, by creating a fixed cost, you lower the peak certain times of the year, and then you raise it in the summer when they're not buying gas. So it's a more uniform cost to the customer. I see that as becoming a big issue in the rate design, because the groups that came to the public
input sessions, they don't like those fixed costs. They prefer to have a higher cost of what they use.
So yeah, that's what I was getting at when I mentioned how this is going to affect the minimum charge that people pay, because that...
I think that's going to become central to that hearing, because I don't suspect the company will move away from what they proposed. I think it'll be more of what public involvement we have during the hearing, if anyone comes at all, quite honestly, and how that might influence our decision. Right now, we haven't had to answer that question, but the fixed costs, I mean, that's kind of the way that the industry is going, because then you can collect your costs more uniform. I think anything we can do to educate customers on balanced billing is a good thing. That I hear a lot from customers that, especially gas, where you'll have relatively no bill in the summer months, then all of a sudden you get these big bills in the winter months. So if you have a fixed cost, that's going to kind of level that out. But by the same token, some groups don't want that because they feel they'd benefit by just paying for what they use. But during the public input, some areas are more heavily subsidized than others right now in the way the costs are being allocated currently at MDU. So I think it's hard to predict, but that will become, I think, the central point of discussion in a hurry.
Dale, the interim rate increases approximately $2.52 per month. And that is also what the company has they've proposed $2.72 would be the average increase per month of what the settlement agreement revenues resulted in.
So the interim is $2.52, and this might be going up to $2.72 per month?
Yeah.
For a residential customer?
Correct.
Okay.
Again, that'll depend on how the charges fall out.
What do you say to what Commissioner Calk just said about the significance of the minimum charges?
I think it's very significant. It's a philosophical issue, you know, in how you design the rates, whether you charge everybody, regardless of how much they use, a flat fee for having the distribution pipe servicing their house or their business, or whether you weigh it based on usage, you know, and charge some people more because they use it more and charge and others less because they use it less. And I don't know where I fall on that yet.
I guess when I'm looking at the aggregate total for what the rate increase would bring in, and the aggregate total for the settlement is a little bit less than the aggregate total for the interim rates, if I'm reading this correctly. But at the same time, the residential customer is going to be paying an average of $2.72 per month extra versus $2.52. And would this indicate that commercial customers are coming off better in this settlement than residential customers are?
Well, I think it's premature to say, because some of that discrepancy may be in the way the rates are designed, and we haven't settled that yet.
But the current rate design, that the heavy users are paying a lot more than residential customers are. There's a slide that we can get you that shows, because we asked that question, is about, you know, they were showing different proposed increases for certain customer classes. But if you look at the end of the day, you know, the industry usually pays more, and that's kind of the way it's gone. And so that's where the shift becomes. We saw in a previous rate case with Otter Tail where the large industrial group intervened, because in the case of Otter Tail, they were tired of paying the bills for other people. So they intervened, and they quite honestly moved the needle quite a bit on that. So, like Julie said, I think it is a philosophical issue that will become center to that hearing.
Okay, the hearing on the rate design is February 5th at 8:30 a.m. Is that correct?
Correct. Should be right here.
Is it or 9th? Was it 5th?
5th.
5th? Okay.
Okay. The Falkirk insolvency, there's reference made to federal issue. Well, first of all, we have a federal lawsuit fighting over $80,000. I just want to make sure I'm interpreting this correctly. We have a federal lawsuit fighting over $80,000 of trust money with $1.9 million of claims. Am I right
about that? You're not on the numbers. You're not.
Well, please
The trust fund claimant is at $1.7 $1.05 million. And in our trust fund, we have $80,500 plus the bond, which was $380,000.
Okay.
So there'd be just over $460,000. And so I don't really know. I can't explain what the federal issue is that they're going to be fighting about, but it seems complex enough. It'll be drawn out a long time. And I think this has probably never been done before. But since there is only the one claimant there, and however that ends, I'm sure, you know, we can address that then with the trust fund money. But I just could see no reason to hold up payment to the indemnity fund claimants. And so that's why we've asked to have these separated and move on with getting at least those seven people paid out.
I wasn't really trying to argue that point. It's just that I'd forgotten about the bond, and it looked like $80,000, and there's and also you mentioned the figure $1.7 million. Isn't that just the one claim?
That's the one claim, correct.
But is that the only claim that's in dispute here?
Yes.
Okay. So it's the $1.7 million claim that's in dispute. There is no dispute over the rest of them, which makes it add up to almost $2 million.
Right. I'm not sure the definition of in dispute. There's nine claimants. One is that big one. Yes. We're approving seven. There is the eighth claimant on the indemnity fund that we denied as invalid because there was an amount they owed there, too, and so that was set off. So I don't know. I suppose there's a potential that that could be disputed when we have the court hearing.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at here is that the nine claimants you mentioned that I'm talking about, these are all claims against the trust fund rather than the credit sale indemnity fund. Am I?
No. The eight of the nine are against the indemnity fund.
Okay.
One is against the trust fund.
I got you. Okay.
And we're denying one of those eight.
Okay. So the $1.7 million is, again, it's the only claimant against the trust fund, and the
yep.
trust fund is the bond plus the assets of approximately $80,000.
Correct.
Okay.
The hearing schedule on the Sandpiper along communities, has that been set? Or...
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Has.
Yep.
Do we have those dates?
Yep. You must not have been listening at the edge of your seat to what I said.
February.
19, 20, and 27, right?
Yeah. Right. Grand Forks, Devil's Lake, and Minot.
You mentioned the locations as well. Could you just re-encapsulate those?
Right.
Yes, I can. Let me pull that up.
I mean, there's one at the law school, one at Devil's Lake.
We'll do it. A news release, too, obviously, but... let me get my schedule out here. It must have been early. JF 1, 2. Do you know what?
February 19th at UND Law School, 20th at Lake Region State College, and 27th at Minot.
At the chamber.
Minot City Council Chamber.
Minot City Council, yeah.
And can you tell me the times, please?
8:30.
8:30 at UND?
All of them.
All of them? Okay. Thank you.
Do you have a cost figure on Sandpiper, by chance?
Ooh.
I think it's in there.
I don't know that it is.
The AP, sorry.
Sorry.
Julie. Total cost, $2.6 billion. North Dakota is $1.3 billion.
Yeah.
They're both almost 300 miles, aren't they?
Yeah.
Is there any concern that, if that's the word, that the Sandpiper project will not come to pass because of the increased reliance on rail? And is that something you even worry about?
I wouldn't worry about that. I would assume that the companies are looking at the supply and demand, and I'm assuming they have contracts in hand for using their the line in a good number of them before they'd even build it.
Do you know offhand where it would cross the red?
South of Grand Forks is what the drawing I saw the last time. I can't give better than south of Grand Forks detail.
South Grand Forks, okay.
Yeah. And where does it cross the Souris River? Does it cross it more than once?
I can't.
South have to look at it. It's north of Minot, so it would have to cross it twice.
Yeah.
and probably to Lack River too, I'm assuming.
Regarding the rate, MDU rate increase, you know how many customers that affects, commercial and residential?
96,000, isn't it? Hold on.
These numbers.
And I think like 12,000, 96,000 customers, 87% of them are residential and 13% commercial.
Mike, if I could add to that, one of the things that we asked during the public input session was, if you're a MDU customer in, you know, the eastern part of the region, is this all because of growth in the west? But this is throughout all their service area. It's improvements through everything. So it's not just the tremendous growth in western North Dakota. It's dealing with all their areas that they serve.
And they were also careful to point out, too, that customers in new divisions do pay for a portion of their infrastructure to serve their division. So it isn't just people in Bismarck paying for new housing developments in Williston and that sort of thing.
The project for the pipeline that's connected to the new Dakota Prairie refining project, you mentioned that it crosses the heart, that it's an above-ground pipeline and that it crosses the Heart River.
Mm-hmm.
How does it cross the Heart River? I mean, is it attached to a bridge? Or?
It is. It's attached to a bridge that is services the refinery.
Is it a rail bridge, a vehicle bridge?
No, it's a vehicle bridge.
Okay. Is it a private bridge?
It is.
Okay. So they're putting it on a private bridge that goes across the Heart River?
Correct.
Okay. And it's not a bridge that's open to the general public traffic?
Correct.
Okay. Was there any, is the commission agnostic about whether this is above or below ground?
I asked a lot of questions about that, just because obviously there's benefits to and risks to both. They've got a lot of security on site, just so and you have to go through a separate gate to get into a good portion of this area. And so the above ground issues in my mind are just security and the vulnerability of a pipe that's exposed in the public. But it's such a short line, and it's all in this very industrial area. And I don't know that they even considered burying it, or they didn't go through that at all with us in the discussion, whether it was a cost or an issue with the materials or whatnot. But they seem to have, you know, emergency response plans in place and had thoroughly considered the risks of having it above ground and addressed them.
I think in this case, Dale, I think above ground is very appropriate. I mean, Commissioner Fedorchuk, I share her concerns, but you look at also that it's above ground. You're going to have every day there's going to be eyes on this pipeline. If there's any leaks, you can see what's going on. If they have a containment system over the bridge, given the complexities of what goes on around a refinery, it's better to have your piping exposed when people go out and do their morning routine of just their surveying around the area. I think it was very appropriate for above ground.
And I think what makes this so unique and allows them to have it above ground is that it's all on the property of the two entities involved here. And it should be pointed out, I don't know if it was mentioned before we voted on it, there is an easement that goes along the boundary of the two properties and a county road there. And so even though the property belongs to the people on each side, there's that easement. And so there will be that little stretch where it is below ground too.
Under the road.
And there
the
is...
The other thing about that, just if I might add, is the products themselves are not extremely explosive or, you know, volatile in any way. So I don't think they're dangerous, you know, from that standpoint.
I just want to make sure I wrote down these figures correctly. The refinery is going to be processing 20,000 barrels of crude each day, making from between 7,000 and 10,000 barrels of diesel fuel, approximately 6,500 barrels of naphtha, and 8,000 barrels of atmospheric bottoms.
6,000.
Atmospheric
tower bottoms is 6,000 barrels per day.
6,000 barrels per day and 6,500 of naphtha?
Correct.
And what, pray tell, are atmospheric tower bottoms?
Lots of gunk that's left. No. I have to look it up.
Is that the technical term, gunk?
It is. Okay. It is.
I'm surprised this wasn't in her resolutions, but they're commonly referred to as ATBs. But
yes, ATBs, atmospheric tower bottoms.
Yeah, so I was aware of that. I'm wondering how to translate atmospheric tower bottoms into English.
You know what? I can look in my application. There was a good description of it. I don't recall offhand what it is.
What do you use atmospheric tower bottoms for?
Well, the way I understand chemicals. It is that when you do the refining for the diesel, you pull out what you need for diesel, and everything else that's not used for diesel and that's not naphtha is considered atmospheric tower bottom, so it's the residual of the refined crude. Then you take that to a more high-tech refinery, if you will, and you can break it down into jet fuel, into 3M scotch tape, and other stuff. So the ATBs would go by rail to a refinery that could further break them down into other type of petroleum byproducts.
Okay, so it requires a more sophisticated refining process than what's going to be available at
Correct.
The Dickinson thing.
And that's where, by having these two outlets of these byproducts, they make money on them. So they had to have a market. And I think it was the naphtha they talked about. They're going to send up to Canada and use it for the heavy crude to kind of as a liquefier, surfactant, if you will. And so they have a market in Canada for the naphtha. They can take the ATBs and send them to a refinery like in Minneapolis or somewhere, and they can further refine that and make money on it. So
I think a lot of plastics and things come from the ATB portion of the barrel of crude.
And that's where their partner in Chicago comes in. They're a key user of the ATBs, and most all of those are going straight to Chicago to the to their, I think, 50-50 partner. What's the name of that company? Remember?
Calumet.
Calumet, yeah. Calumet is the destination for the ATBs and the user of them.
They have a cool logo. the Falkirk, excuse me, the CenturyLink case.
Oh, sure.
What is there? I guess I don't mean this way it sounds, but is there much demand anymore for resold CenturyLink services?
Well, there's certainly a lot of folks that still use it. But I guess the demand, like I talked about, the growth of Mid-Continent in the state, there's a lot more competition out there for who can get what exchange services. So I think that's part of the reason that no one came in to debate about these changes, because one of the questions we asked in the informal was, you know, why are they doing this? And these formulas make it easier for CenturyLink to pay out less money is what it really comes down to. But there just doesn't seem to be the concern there may have been at one time, probably to make your point that there's other choices out there.
And what, I mean, I guess you mentioned this a bit, but what is the point of these changes? Is it to, you know, I presume that CenturyLink isn't that interested in reselling its, I mean, back when the whole resale debate was going on, then it was U.S. West Quest. They were saying, why are we compelled to sell our services to other people who are going to compete against us? And that wasn't something they really were enamored of doing. And I would presume, I'm just presuming, given that context, that the changes that they wanted to make aren't designed to make it a lot groovier for people who want to buy their services and compete against them.
That was the questions that we asked during the informals, and that's the feel that I got back, is that this makes it easier for Quest to meet all their indicators. They're redefining some of the measures. They're changing some of the formulas, quite honestly, to benefit CenturyLink. But no one brought up any concerns. The questions that we asked, they basically answered them. It's a move since 96 Telcom to further open up access and less regulation.
And I think another factor in this, even though it's hard to point to a lot of cases where there's heavy new demand for reselling in North Dakota, CenturyLink is a multi-state entity, and this was done as part of a case in Colorado with larger cities and probably more demand for this. And these new rules, if you will, were developed in that case with a strong push toward them to try to equalize this throughout the whole service area of theirs. And so I think a lot of the push from CenturyLink to want to do this is to just get all the states on board with the same plan. And so it may not have a real big impact in North Dakota as it does in some of the other states.
great point. We did ask. It does mean if we asked if they used this formula for their previous years, they'd actually be paying out less money in violations, if you will, in the past years. So there's going to be less revenue exchanging hands because of these new performance indicators, potentially, if they applied the last year's data. I think Randy's point was spot on. It's something they did in other jurisdictions, so they just applied it here.
And are there more requests for, or is there more concern about the reselling of, like, mid-continent services or other facilities-based carriers?
I think right now it's what the rules are going to be going forward, and it's becoming more and more deregulated. As we found with the Consolidated case and Mid-Continent, they've got their own agreements they're working out. I think you just can continue to see more and more services available to come through fiber, which will probably be completely unregulated at some point in time.
And I guess I got my question answered about atmospheric tower bottoms. Why are they called tower bottoms?
It's
the refining process is sort of
the bottom of the tower,
a tube.
All right.
And as they refine it, the first thing that clears up is the diesel fuel, and then I can't remember which is in the middle. The naphtha, the naphtha must be in the middle, and the ATB is at the bottom.
Sorry.
And
the Falkirk Consultancy. Can you tell me what are sample grade beans? What does that mean? You know,
poor, lesser quality, okay. But I don't know beyond that.
And also, if you are a farmer with a claim against an insolvent elevator, I guess from reading skimming through the order today, it seemed like if you're a corn farmer, a wheat farmer, or a bean farmer, you have to pay the check off on the goods that you sell. But even if you don't get paid for the goods you sell, am I correct on that?
I don't know.
Because part of the claims were disallowed because of they can't claim to get back their checkoff.
Well, I think that those checkoffs have to do with commodity promotional.
I know
things. That's not the checkoff into the indemnity fund.
I know.
That's been suspended.
That's clear to me. What I'm interested in is a scenario was, okay, I sell my beans to an elevator. I don't get paid for those beans, but I end up paying the promotional checkoff for those beans, even though I don't get paid for them.
It's an offset against what you're actually owed.
It's a required offset at the grain elevator, and when it's deducted, you have the right to go to the bean, the wheat commissioner, whoever, and get it back, a refund. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it's an offset that's taken. It's not money that's paid to the wheat commission or anybody. It's just an avenue to have more money to help pay the other people. Does that make sense? Or?
Well, it doesn't. Maybe I'm just not understanding it correctly, but it doesn't seem.
I think they can get reimbursed that amount from their commodity group.
Well, not in an insolvency they can, because the insolvency, we the PSC do not pay that fee to the wheat commission or whoever. It's an offset in the process, that's required by the grain elevator to deduct. And then in the proper flow, the elevator pays the various groups, and then the farmer has the right to go and get that back. But in our situation, insolvency, it's an avenue, it's a required offset, but it's an avenue for us to have more money in our pool to help pay the next individual.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm just...
But none of the grower groups.
It seems a little hinky to me that I go and get my offset. I go and have the offset for the money that I'm due for my crop, but I don't get that money.
They wouldn't have been getting it anyway, though. They would have been paying it to the commodity group, so were going to have that money unless they went back to the commodity group and got it.
Did the commodity group get the money? Do you know?
No.
Okay. All right.
Dave, did you have a question?
But lastly, on that,
the commodity group make a claim?
No, I don't. Not that I'm aware of. The last thing, though, I wanted to point out on there, because I've talked several times about moving the process along more quickly, I think this bifurcating in this case is a great example of that. It's something that's probably never been done before, to my knowledge, that we came up with staff as a way to, rather than hold up 8 claims because there's a legal dispute over one of them, to try and get the court to let us separate it. We'll get 7 of them paid out and worry about the other one when the court case is done.
I know there's a question rattling around in my skull for the last 20 minutes, and I forgot it, and you just helped me remember it. And it is this. When you describe this whole situation to someone else, do you ever use the word bifurcate?
I noticed he immediately used separated when he used it like in normal talk later.
I have not in the past, but it almost made my list of resolutions to try and find at least one case per year in which to use the word bifurcate.
Because when someone says bifurcate, I want to reach for the bicarbonate.
Actually, I think about bivalves and having clams or something.
The illegal term, Alana came back in. Dave, do you have
just one quick question, just because there's one penny difference in BK1 and BK2.
Okay.
Ottertail got one more penny than MDU did.
97.28.13 and 97.28.14. I would suspect it'd be rounding.
Well, I was going to say, do you like Ottertail better?
Well, no. But if you'd like me to rank the top 3 investor owns, I could tell you it'd be 3rd.
You did mention certain utilities in the eastern part of the state that kind of waffle about what they want. Who are you talking about?
I think that would be Xcel Energy doing business as Northern States Power.
What sense are they waffling in the telephone?
Well, we continue. The commission is able to, I think, make very good decisions, and we have a good information in front of us. And we have ADP for wind farms, ADP for gas, rate case, and now we're dealing with a settlement agreement. It seems challenging that they still figured out exactly what they want. So, where MDU in this case, I think, was very clear, and they worked hard to get to where they wanted to go.
So MDU handles these better than Excel does?
In this particular case, I would say so, yes. Dave, anything else? Dale, anything? Okay. Anything else? Commissioners, colleagues, anything we should... We good?
I think we're good.
Okay.
Happy New Year.
Statements, or did I just miss them?
No, we're good, Dave. We'll close the special meeting.